Morning. Good to see everyone this morning. We are ready to begin the 27th chapter of Ezekiel. We have noted that, of course, a good bit of Ezekiel, God is talking to the exiles of Judah who have come to Babylon, Chaldea. Ezekiel is speaking to them. Reminding them of their sin, foretelling of the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple and so forth at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. And we've entered into a section where God is now addressing the nations around Judea. Charles, a couple weeks ago, got us into this, we've got three chapters dealing with Tyre. And that's interesting because it's, you know, he spends more time with Tyre than any of the others. A couple of things are significant about that. You'll notice that in chapter 26, when God begins to address Tyre and says he's bringing judgment against them, he says it's because you went, aha. You know, you kind of laugh. Well, what we need to understand is that Jerusalem was kind of the meeting point of all the trade routes going north and south, you know, from up in Turkey and Asia and down into Egypt and so forth. They all come through that area, and Jerusalem was the main city of trade. Tyre is on the coast, of course, of the Mediterranean Sea, and it was the seaport of the Mediterranean for all points, you know, east of that eastern Mediterranean shoreline. And so everything coming from the west would come to Tyre, everything going to the west would go through Tyre, and so He's really talking about the fact of their greed and so forth. And so, okay, Jerusalem's gone. Well, we're the only show in town. Now, everybody's going to come to us. Well, everybody was already coming to them, okay? But and the interesting thing about it, you know, you'll notice, you remember that Charles told us, you know, reminded us of the year that it happened and what year and so forth. Well, it was the exact same year that Jerusalem was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. Jerusalem fell in July. Tyre falls in September. Now, Nebuchadnezzar didn't destroy the island port of Tyre. You know, Tyre consisted of both the island and there were some mainland cities as well as some mainland ports. And Sidon was actually considered kind of part of Tyre and part of that trading and so forth. But what Nebuchadnezzar did was he destroyed all of those mainland ports and so forth. But in chapter 26, when he's talking about you will be wiped bare and so forth, well, that was actually accomplished a couple hundred years later by Alexander the Great. He's the one that came in and actually scraped the mainland just in front of Tyre, wiped it clean, and built that, you know, greater causeway out to the island, as well as, it's kind of interesting, you know, the battle and everything is kind of neat to look at that. You know, they had trouble. You know, if you're building a causeway out to an island, certainly, Tyre is going to defend itself. And they were throwing all kinds of things at the people, you know, even melting sand and so forth and catapulting that out. It made it pretty difficult. Alexander the Great got tired of that and built some ships with battering rams on them and just battered the city walls with ships. I mean, just crashed into it. But Alexander the Great is the one that actually tore the walled city on the island of Tyre, tore it down. Walls were no more. It was never rebuilt. Even to this day, it's not rebuilt. And by built, doesn't mean uninhabited. There are some little fishing villages there. But a city was not considered built in Bible times until the wall was built. There's never been a wall around Tyre since Alexander the Great destroyed it. And significant, you know, you say, well, why do you say all that? Well, it shows that God foretold that this is what's going to happen. And it happened. And it still is to this day. On the little island of Tyre, I mean, there's fresh water wells and so forth. I mean, you could have a city out there. There's not one out there. It has deep seaport. It could still be, you know, as far as functionally, it could still be a seaport. You know, it had two harbors. One faced the north, one faced the south. They even named it. And the northern was called the Sidonian, and the southern was called the Alexandrian for Alexandria, Egypt. Okay, so just gives you an idea of the importance of Tyre. What you'll notice here, he says, moreover, the word of the Lord came to me saying, you son of man, take up a lamentation over Tyre. You, Ezekiel, son of man, you take up a lamentation over Tyre. And the interesting thing about that is in chapter 26 and verses 16 and 17, all the princes of the sea. Now that means all of the seaports all around the Mediterranean Sea, all of the kings and the rulers and so forth, were instructed to take up a lamentation for Tyre. Here, Ezekiel is directed to sing a song depicting the death of Tyre. He says, Tyre, who dwells at the entrance of the sea, merchant of the peoples of many coastlands. I tried to find a map that had all of the names of all of the kind of the cities that traded through Tyre and so forth. And I really couldn't find one that had all of them. This, you'll see, is a map of, you know, where did the descendants of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, where did they end up? And you'll see some of these, you know, here's Dedan here, some others that will be mentioned. All I want us to do is to understand that these peoples and cities that it's talked about that Tyre is going to trade with, most of them, you know, are from in this area. But it is widespread, okay? It'll also talk about Tarshish over here. It's one of the first ones that talked about when it gets into the trading and so forth, and they get their metal and so forth from Spain. But I just wanted to give us an idea of what that looked like. And then also, I found this to be interesting, a map of the commercial network of the Phoenicians. And you'll notice that, you know, here's Tyre and Sidon and Byblos. These are the three main seaports, harbors, if you will, for trade, with Tyre really being the capital, the shining city on the sea, because of that unique island and its deep harbors and big harbors. But you notice that they go, you know, north and south all along the coast of northern coast of Africa here up and finally out here up into here, Cilicia, Crete, Cyprus, you know, all of it. So, you know, they know the Mediterranean Sea. They travel it all. And if you've got anything that you want to sell from over here to the people that live over in here, by sea's a pretty good way to do it. You know, you can get there faster on a ship than you can by land. And the same thing here. If you've got things you want to sell from here and sell it over here, you go through Tyre. You know, and when we start looking at some of the merchandise and so forth that goes through Tyre, you begin to realize that, you know, it's probably a pretty neat city. Anything you could imagine that you wanted, you could probably get in Tyre. You've got everything going through there. So economically wise, it's a very important city. Thus says the Lord God. This is what you will sing. These are the lyrics to the song, Ezekiel. Tyre didn't see itself as God saw it. God saw itself as, you know, we're invincible, we're rich, nothing's going to change. What could change it? Why would anybody want to change it? You see? Jerusalem, they depended upon their God. Look where that got them. Their walls are flattened. Their temple's destroyed. Their people are taken into exile. Well, I don't know about Nebuchadnezzar, but when Alexander the Great destroyed Tyre, there were 8,000 people killed and 30,000 people taken into slavery. So, Tyre, you don't think, you're not as you see yourself. God sees you as you are. And so, he describes Tyre in the picture of a ship. You know, since it is a shipping city, he just describes Tyre as a ship. And so as you look at these things, you say, well, what's he talking about here? You know, that your planks are made of fir trees and so forth. You know, he's not talking about the city itself. He's describing Tyre as if it were itself a ship, okay? And the beauty of it and the strength of it. And so this is how Tyre sees itself, okay? O Tyre, you have said, I am perfect in beauty. Your borders are in the heart of the seas. Your builders have perfected your beauty. They have made all your planks of fir trees from Senir. They have taken a cedar from Lebanon to make a mast for you. Of oaks of Bashan, they have made your oars. With ivory, they have laid your deck of boxwood from the coastlands of Cyprus. Your sail of fine embroidered linen from Egypt, so that it became your distinguishing mark. Your awning was blue and purple from the coastlands of Elishan. So, you know, here he's describing, you know, this is how Tyre sees itself. The best of the best from all over the world. You know, wherever the best is, it's come to Tyre. You know, we have the very best. We are the best. In fact, one of the things about Tyre is that there was a shellfish around there. It was from this region that, you know, they really got the dye for the color purple. You know, and that was one of the reasons that, you know, it became such a famous, everybody likes purple. So everybody wanted purple, and it became the color of royalty and so forth, and not everybody could have it, but everybody liked it. Nate likes purple.
You wear purple either you're rich or you go long or not.
All right. He goes on, he says, the inhabitants of Sidon and Arvad were your rowers, the wise men. Your wise men, O Tyre, were aboard. They were your pilots. The elders of Gebal and her wise men were with you repairing your seams. All the ships of the sea and all the sailors were where you were with you in order to deal in your merchandise. And so the very best of the best from everywhere. In fact, Gebal here, the craftsmen from Gebal were brought to Jerusalem to build the temple. You know, that's how skilled they were. And He's just talking about you've got the, you know, something goes wrong with the ship, you've got the very best to fix it. Something goes wrong with the city, you've got the very best there to take care of it, you know. You've got the best to build, you've got the best to keep things going. You're just the best. You're the best in the whole world, you know. That's the way they looked at themselves. God's kind of building them up and say, you know, there's not a better ship on the sea, not a better seaport anywhere. You know, you're it. Everybody wants to be like you. Okay.
And skill, crew, something like Bruce Jones.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So he goes on here, and in this portion we find a directory of Tyre's security forces and trade partners. I mean, you know, here's the Phoenicians, okay, Tyre, these little seaports. I mean, we're not talking geographically. We're not talking about a big area. So how do you defend yourself? Well, they hire it done. They got plenty of money. So they hire mercenaries. Persia and Lud and Put were in your army, your men of war. They hung shield and helmet in you. They set forth your splendor. The sons of Arvad and your army where were on your walls all around. And the Gamadim were in your towers. They hung their shields on your walls all around and perfected your beauty. So he's just talking about, you know, they didn't have their own army with their own uniforms and so forth, but these fighting men from these other areas, they come and they hang their shields there. They hang their helmets there. They're there to defend you. Any questions or comments about anything here? Okay, so he turns his attention then to their customers. Tarshish was your customer because of the abundance of all kinds of wealth with silver, iron, tin, and lead. They paid for your wares. So this is what they brought to trade. Tarshish, where's Tarshish?
Spain.
Why else is Tarshish? Does it sound familiar to us? What? Paul wanted to go to Spain. He talked about wanting to go to Spain. What else? Jonah. You know, when God called Jonah to go to Nineveh and prophesy to Nineveh to try to save the people, Jonah said, well, I don't want to save Nineveh. I'm going to get as far away from here as I possibly can. Spain is about as far away as you could go in that day and time. So that's where, you know, why does Tarshish sound familiar? So you've got, and you need to remember that, I mean, I believe that, you know, these were the goods that were coming from Spain. You know, there's mines there and all of these metals, you know, are produced there even today. But it's also just representative of, you know, from where was everybody coming to come to, you know, little Tyre, okay? All over the world. Okay? It's important. Verse 13. Javan, Tubal, and Meshech, they were your traders. With the lives of men and vessels of bronze, they paid for your merchandise. So they dealt in the slave trade. They had access to bronze and so forth. Everybody likes shiny things. Those from Beth Togarmah gave horses and war horses and mules for your wares. The sons of Dedan were your traders. Many coastlands were your market. Ivory tusk, and ebony they brought as your payment. That African coast, you see. Aram was your customer because of the abundance of your goods. They paid for wares with emeralds, purple, embroidered work, fine linen, coral, and rubies. Judah and the land of Israel, they were your traders with the wheat of Minnith, cakes, honey, oil, and balm they paid for your merchandise. Damascus was your customer because of the abundance of your goods, because of the abundance of all kinds of wealth, because of the wine of Helbon and white wool. Vadin and Javan paid for your wares from Uzal, wrought iron, cassia, and sweet cane were among your merchandise. Dedan traded with you in sackcloths for riding. Arabia and all the princes of Kedar, they were your customers for lambs, rams, and goats, for these were your customers. The traders of Sheba and Rama, they traded with you. They paid for your wares with the best of all kinds of spices and with all kinds of precious stones and gold. Haran, Cana, Eden, the traders of Sheba, Asher, and Talmud traded with you. They traded with you in choice garments, in clothes of blue and embroidered work, and in carpets and many colors, and tightly wound cords, which were among your merchandise. I just find that interesting because that's even treated, you know, your rugs from India and so forth. You're familiar with the tapestries. And, you know, when I lived in Egypt, you know, when I lived in Germany, you know, we had access to that kind of thing. Some of it was good quality and some of it was, you know, just getting ready. We've got some of the not so good quality, but, you know, I'm surprised at how it held up. I mean, we're still using it. It still looks pretty good. But they're famous for those kinds of things, even back in Bible times, you see. The ships of Tarshish were your carriers for all your merchandise, and you were filled and were very glorious in the heart of the seas. So you've got all of this wonderful merchandise coming from all over the world, coming to Tarshish. It's being traded there. You know, everybody brought what they had, and people brought what they had, and said, "I like what you've got," and he says, "Well, I like what you got," and trade it, and you take it home, and you sell it. So you can imagine how wealthy they were, and because they were wealthy, they thought they were pretty strong, thought they were pretty great, don't need any, you know, any God to tell us what to do. The gods serve us, we don't serve God. That was their attitude. Here we come to this part now of the shipwreck of Tyre and her trading partners. You know, not only is Tyre affected by this, but all these trading partners that we've just looked at, they're going to be affected by it too. The harbor shut down. We've got no place to trade. Your rowers have brought you into great waters. Okay, so keep in mind, you know, he's still using this this picture of Tyre as a ship, okay, of a merchant ship, okay, and it's gone out into the sea, okay. The rowers have brought you into the great waters. The east wind has broken into the heart of the seas. Well, you know, if you're trying to sail to the east, as you would be if you were sailing from Spain or whatever, that's pretty hard to do. When the wind comes out of the east, it's difficult on the Mediterranean Sea. But the east wind here is not talking about a literal wind. What do you think he's talking about? Who is the east wind? Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, he's coming in and he's going to, you know, destroy your trade. The east wind has broken in the heart of the sea, broken you in the heart of the seas. Your wealth, your wares, your merchandise, your sailors and your pilots, your repairers of seams, your dealers in merchandise, and all your men of war who are in you with all your company that is in your midst will fall into the heart of the seas. On the day of your overthrow, at the sound of the city of your, at the sounds of the cry of your pilots, the pasture lands will shake. You've got the best of everything, but it's all going down. It's all going down. You know, remember a few years ago when you had some banks and stuff that were in trouble here and the government bailed them out and they said, well, they're too big to fail, you know? Nobody's too big to fail.
105 years ago, there was a ship that set sail from England called the Titanic.
Yeah. The unsinkable ship.
Unsinkable ship. Maiden voyage.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter, you know, we look at all of these, you know, here's this great harbor, great seaport, you know, it'll always be great. It'll never be any different. It's just too important. I mean, it's the gateway to the east and the west, you know. It's why would it ever be destroyed? It's just going to keep getting better. No, not because of your attitude. God's going to take it down. You know, what about the Babylonian Empire? Where is it today? Where's the Persian Empire that replaced it? Where's the Roman Empire? Too big to fail. No, not too big to fail. They all fail. They all go down. In America, you know, we think, well, we're just too good to fail. Too important. Now, there's people that want to see us destroyed. And it could happen. When we forget God, when we become corrupt, that's exactly what happened with these people. You know, whether you're talking about Judah or whether you're talking about, you know, all of these other countries that bring about the destruction of Judah and laugh and rejoice at her fall. They didn't love God. And all who handle the oar, the sailors and all the pilots of the sea, will come down from their ships. They will stand on the land. They will make their voice heard over you and will cry bitterly. They will cast dust on their heads. They will wallow in ashes. Also, they will make themselves bald for you and gird themselves with sackcloth. They will weep for you in bitterness of soul, with bitter mourning. Moreover, in their wailing, they will take up a lamentation for you and lament over you. Who is like Tyre? Like her who is silent in the midst of the sea? Who, when your wares went out from the seas, you satisfied many people with the abundance of your wealth and with merchandise. You enriched the kings of the earth. How did this happen? How can this be? The economy of the entire Mediterranean world is affected by the fall of Tyre. And that's what's being expressed there. And that's exactly what happened.
They did and they will affect a lot of people. Even after they're gone.
Yeah. So, Now, it took a while to recover from this. This was not a quicker. In fact, it was an ongoing process. I mean, remember what I said, you know, that Nebuchadnezzar kind of dealt the first blow, but it was Alexander the Great that really wiped out Tyre. I always wondered about that. Why not make them an ally, you know? But that's why he was called the Great. There is no allies. Okay, we take no allies. But the other part of it is, God said this is what's going to happen. He was bringing judgment against them. You know, it wasn't, you know, Tyre didn't fall eventually to Alexander the Great to never be great again, okay, because Alexander the Great was who he was. Tyre fell because they said, aha, when Jerusalem fell, when they laughed. Israel was still God's people. He was still the one true God. You know, and when you laugh at God's people when they're in distress, God doesn't take that lightly. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like when you see your child out there on the athletic field and maybe they fall down or they make a mistake and somebody laughs about it. Don't take that very lightly, do you? Israel had sinned. They'd become a rebellious children against God, but they were still his children. Okay? He was disciplining them, but the other nations of the world weren't to rejoice when they saw that. They interpreted that as, well, look at how great their God is now. He's allowed them to be destroyed. He's allowed them to be taken into captivity. And basically, they're saying their God's not any different than our God. He's not any greater than our God. Our gods can't deliver us, and their God can't deliver them. Well, yeah, their God delivered them into captivity for their discipline.
Mm-hmm. We elevate ourselves. We have become them. Because why would we need anything else?
Right.
And time and time and time again, whether it is the nation of Israel or all the other nations around it, God will raise up another nation to take them over.
Right.
And then however that nation that comes into conquers them, however they too will be judged.
Yeah.
And so we look at that and we say, so then what can be done? Well, I think the point is, it's not about the nation as a whole. It's about the inhabitants. He cried out and said, God, there's no one but you and me that are faithful in God. He said, not everyone has bowed the knee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are still faithful people in Israel. Israel's still going to fall, but I will protect my remnant. And it's the same is true with us today. You know, we look around and we might get disheartened at everything that we see in the world. We might even get upset at things that we see going on in the church. But individuals are the ones that God is going to redeem. You know, not this mass, not America, not a state or anything like that. God is wanting individuals.
Yeah.
He wants them to be righteous despite whatever's going on around.
Right. Right. So all of this is to teach us a lesson. You know, all of this is recorded so that we know that, well, when Tyre fell, it wasn't just because Nebuchadnezzar was so great or Alexander the Great was so great. It's because God had judged them. Okay? When Jerusalem fell and the temple was destroyed, it wasn't because Nebuchadnezzar was so great. It was because God was working through Nebuchadnezzar to judge his people and to discipline them, to purify them, and for a remnant to return. And all of this shows is that, look, you know, it's not really about the city that you live in. It's about the city that God has prepared for us. That are we preparing ourselves for that by becoming like Him, or are we becoming like the nations round about us? You know, are we carnally minded, or are we seeking the divine nature? What are we looking at? You know, and all of these things are to teach us a lesson. Now, in the next chapter, he's going to direct his attention to the princes of Tyre, the leaders of Tyre, and so forth. You know, why are the people thinking the way they're thinking and acting the way they're acting? Well, because the leaders are thinking this way and acting this way, you know. So we'll have some things to notice about that and some applications to make there as well. Anything else before we close? Exactly the way it's worded. What's your point?
I was just trying to verify something myself because it's a lot of, you know, the Holocaust that we did in the Jews were pretty poorly and everything, but
so are you asking, you know, whenever a nation, is it because God is pronouncing judgment against them?
No.
Okay. I mean, you know, you need to be careful there, you know, in that you think, well, okay, Japan lost the war and Germany lost the war, and, you know, is that because they were sinful? You know, is it because of what the Germans did against the Jews and, you know, all that kind of stuff? Well, there's no way for us to know. You know, why did America win those wars and so forth? You know, we don't have prophecies about that. God doesn't tell us that. And so and it's wrong for us to infer that. See, that's not a necessary inference. You know, you can infer it, but God didn't imply it. You know, God is saying this is what happened with these people and this is why it happened with them. You see? And that's what we're to learn from.
Okay.
All right.